Week 146 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. Iowa has been on quite a break. I mean, we're talking 8 days since its last game, the Iowa men's basketball team falling to Indiana. And, you know, the players typically will tell you after a loss like that last one, I think probably any loss, that they usually want to get right back on that horse and play someone else the next day, you know, or at least in the next few days. And this was a tough time to lose a game. Iowa falls at home to Indiana in a game where Iowa went 11 straight minutes in the second half without a field goal. How did it happen? Well, Indiana's defense, perimeter defense, was fantastic. They locked Jordan Bohannon down. He went, I believe, 0 for 8. Let me pull up the box score. I don't want to spend too much time talking about this game, as obviously it doesn't really do any good to talk about last week's game at this point. I know the players have moved on from it, as they should. But if you take a look at what Indiana did, they held Jordan Bohannon to 0 for 9 from the field, 0 for 8 from 3. I mean, listen, your most prolific shooter in the history of the program, if he's got 0 points, you're probably in trouble. I mean, you know, Garza had 28 points, 10 of 22, just 1 of 4 from 3, and 12 boards. Wieskamp also had a double-double at 16 points and 12 boards. Imagine if those two guys didn't go off, how much of a struggle this would have been to even be close. Frederick got knocked out in the first half. Remember, Frederick was dealing with a lower leg, foot, ankle, not sure exactly the details on this injury before the Indiana game. And there were some reports, you know, remember I believe he missed some time or just didn't look right against Northwestern. But he did start on Thursday and proceeded to be knocked out of the game. And so, you know, at this point, the question becomes, will he be able to play against Illinois? He was not effective against Indiana and then sat the rest of the game, only played 13 minutes of that game. So Keegan Murray got a lot more time, ended up with 8 points, 5 boards, but 0 for 2 from 3. Patrick McCaffrey he struggled. This was as much as I've seen Patrick struggle, with maybe the exception of Gonzaga. Patrick McCaffrey, 0 for 4 from the field, had just 2 rebounds, and no points. He just couldn't get going. Jack Nungy was 2 of 4 from 3, so he did have 5 points. That can't be right. 2 of 4 from the field. No threes for Jack. Had 5 boards. Usually when Jack Nungy's struggling, he's still getting rebounds for you, and that's a good thing. I thought we didn't see enough from Joe Toussaint. Came in late in the game and ended up with only 8 minutes for the entire game. He's got to play more. I think Fran would probably say that. He sort of alluded to that after the game in his press conference, that it probably should have put Joe Toussaint in the game sooner. Fran's explanation as to why he didn't was basically that, hey, we were down C.J. Frederick, and we needed to have Jordan Bohannon on the floor. Well, there's 2 issues with that. Jordan Bohannon was 0 for 8. I'm not saying you bench the kid for the rest of the game, but when the threes aren't falling and you're down your best 3-point shooter to injury and you're, well, I mean, I don't know, who's better 3-point shooter, Frederick or Bohannon? I think it's a toss-up. But you're down your highest percentage 3-point shooter in C.J. Frederick and your most prolific 3-point shooter in Bohannon. You know, when you're down one of them, the other guy's just ice cold. I think it might be smart to try to start getting to the rim a little bit more. And as we know, Jordan Bohannon's just not going to do that. So I thought it would have been nice to get Joe Toussaint in there earlier. You know, and then I had some people come back at me and say, well, Joe can't shoot threes, so they're sagging off him. Here's the deal. Okay, they're sagging off of him. We've not seen Joe Toussaint shoot many threes this year, okay? In fact, Joe Toussaint mentioned this in his press conference this week, that he does feel confident with his 3. So you're going to have to – Joe Toussaint, as Anthony Cowan of Maryland said last year, if you're going to stop Joe Toussaint, you're guarding one of the toughest and quickest guards in the Big Ten. You're going to have to really sag off the kid. And I'd like to see that. I mean, listen, I'm not saying you bench Bohannon in this game, but I think they would have been – I think Fran would have been – wise to slide Bohannon to the 2. I mean, we saw so much Bohannon, Wieskamp, Murray, Nungy, Patrick Garza. I just don't quite understand. You know, obviously Connor got some time. You know, when you have Connor at the two, I mean, okay, so your two can't consistently shoot threes. Wieskamp can. Bohannon's cold. And you've got maybe Nunji at the four, Garza at the five, or maybe Keegan at the four, Garza at the five. I just think you need somebody who can attack the rim, because Connor and Jordan are not going to attack the rim. And when neither of your guards can get to the rim, you're in trouble. C.J. Frederick can attack the rim. He's not a guy who's going to finish and dunk over you, but he's a guy who can slash, he can drive with or without the basketball. So I just think Fran would have been better off giving Toussaint some time early on in that second half. I think Fran, I don't think he was going to say that openly, but I do think we'll see more of Joe Toussaint tonight against Illinois. It was good to see some run from Tony Perkins. He played six solid minutes. Obviously, he got more time because of Frederick's injury. But again, Tony has not proven yet at this level to be a great three-point shooter. In fact, I don't know that we've seen him shoot a three yet at this level. So, and I'm sure, you know, we've talked to his uncle, Franklin Henderson, on this show. I'm sure he would say that Tony can shoot threes. I mean, we know he shot threes in high school. But I just think if you're concerned about three-point shooting, slide your best three-point shooter at the two and then have a guy who can attack the rim. And maybe that's not Joe Toussaint all the time. Maybe it's Aaron Ulis. We saw Aaron Ulis play some solid minutes against Rutgers earlier this year. And I know that Iowa's loaded. But with Frederick out, to me this is an opportunity to see more not only of Joe Toussaint and Tony Perkins, but also of Aaron Ulis. And I know you can say, well, they're going too deep. I think when you're down one of your top, three or four players, I think one of those guys could potentially equal two bench players. So you might go an extra bench guy deep because one of your starters is out. Maybe that theory is nonsense. That's kind of how I feel this situation, because Frederick brings so much to the table, and that's why he's a starter, and that's why he's going to be a 1,000-point scorer at Iowa and potentially be a first or second team Big Ten guy in a couple of years. But I would like to see more of Ulis and or Toussaint. If that means Toussaint gets 25 minutes tonight, so be it. If that means that Toussaint gets 12 and Ulis gets 12, so be it. I think both those guys can attack the rim, especially against another very talented. This is a very similar team to Indiana tonight. The difference with Illinois is Illinois has a guy inside who can be dominant on the glass, who's almost impossible to cover from a physical standpoint, and they have better shooters. So that's the difference, and that's why Illinois right now is elite and Indiana is consistently inconsistent. But Indiana wins 81-69 over Iowa in Iowa City. Keep in mind, Iowa missed every field goal for 11 straight minutes in that second half. They still shot 38% from the field. The problem is they gave up 49%, which, you know, you say, well, that's not terrible. It's not good. Let me put this in perspective for you. Indiana was a good defensive team heading into this game. Iowa, of course, was not. Iowa was at, 70-72, somewhere in there, in KenPom defensive efficiency. Ever since that Gonzaga game where they fell down to like 92 in the country, they had slowly each game moved themselves up by winning games, with the exception of the Minnesota game, which was also bad. But they slowly moved themselves up. They'd gotten up to, actually, I think high 60s, and I think right before this game against Indiana, they were right around 70. One loss to Indiana and one putrid performance on the defensively, Iowa slid all the way back down to like 90 or 92. So that just shows you how fragile Iowa's defensive efficiency rating is. It's still not good. You know, everybody's talking about how Iowa's defense has improved. I'm still not convinced, because what we saw against Indiana was wide-open three-point shooters. As soon as you reverse the ball, we're seeing this as a trend. As soon as teams realize that, hey, if we can move the ball effectively, we can reverse the ball, we're going to have an open shooter at some point. And I've yet to see Iowa consistently play 30 seconds. We saw Iowa dominate Northwestern, and Northwestern really doesn't have the shooters. And right now, they're struggling, obviously. We saw Iowa have a good performance against Purdue earlier on in the year. Didn't think they had very good shooters. Remember, I think in Iowa gave them quite a few open shots. Of course, they're playing better now, but they're more of a defensive team. And, you know, Iowa won games. Who did they play earlier on this year? I'm drawing a blank on their previous opponents. Rutgers, obviously, can shoot threes. They gave up 75 to Rutgers. Not terrible. Maryland is another team that they can be on, but when they're off, they're off. So I'm still waiting to see it. This is going to be an opportunity tonight against the Illini to prove that this team can guard the ball, because they're going to have guys like Trent Frazier, guys like Iodesumu, guys like Adam Miller. These guys are going to attack. And don't forget Trevion Williams, who was in the face of Connor McCaffrey last year, right? The famous photo that came out of that game when Iowa lost in Champaign. He's improved as well. And then you got guys like Andre Curbelo. Of course, we mentioned Coburn and Georgie Bashanishvili. This is a team that has underachieved in Illinois. They probably should be top 10. Talent level, they are a top 10 team, but they've lost some games they shouldn't lose. And as a result, they are, I think, what, 19? Is that where I was at right now? 19 in the country in the AP poll. So this is going to be an opportunity for Iowa to prove itself defensively again. Every game is going to be an opportunity for Iowa to prove itself and prove itself on the glass, because between Georgie Bashanishvili and Kofi Coburn, they have guys who can rebound the basketball. I was disappointed to see Wieskamp. You know, Wieskamp played so well in that first half, and he kind of pulled a Jared Utoff a la December 2015 against Iowa State. Wieskamp basically had a huge first half, disappeared in the second half, and really didn't take shots. I mean, if you remember Jared Utoff in 2015 against the Cyclones, I was at that game in Hilton Coliseum, and had 30 points in the first half, could not be stopped, would not miss shots, and just didn't shoot in the second half. Now, the question is, did they do something different against him in the second half? I'm sure they did. But if they didn't, shame on you. And if they did, make adjustments if you're Fran McCaffrey. So I thought that was disappointing from both Joe Wieskamp's standpoint and the coaching standpoint. But an opportunity for Iowa. We'd speculated last week. We speculated about maybe having a game between the Indiana and Illinois games. That didn't happen. The Big Ten did not schedule a game. So this has been an opportunity for Iowa to work on itself. You've had 8 days now in between games. I'm sure it's not been a fun 8 days for Iowa. As fans, I don't think any of us have really been real high on Iowa. I know a lot of people, including those in the media, are predicting an Illinois win tonight. I know Vegas favors Illinois by 2.5. I think that's probably a little low. I think Illinois should probably be favored by more like 4 or 5. Not because I'm going to go bet on it. I would never do that. But what I'm saying is, if you look at this team, Illinois is the type of team that's going to give Iowa problems. We saw Iowa win there against Illinois last year at home on a Sunday with a home crowd. But they added Adam Miller. Again, Kofi Coburn has improved. They added the kid I just said, Curbelo. And this is an improved team, a team that can give Iowa problems. If Iowa is not where they need to be defensively tonight, they will lose, and they will lose by double digits. And I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm saying if they are not on defensively, this is not Indiana. Iowa lost by double digits to Indiana at home. Let's remember that. Indiana is a poor shooting team. In fact, they shot very poorly in the first half, got going a little bit in the second half, still only scored 81. A lot of those points were from the free throw line. So you look at the numbers and you think, okay, Iowa played decent defense. If you watch the game and you look at the defensive efficiency rating from KenPom, it was bad. Iowa's defense was really, really, really bad. So let's take a look at KenPom ratings right now. The new net rankings came out today. Iowa at 5, Illinois at 7. That's about where you'd think these two teams should be, where they were preseason. If you look at KenPom, Iowa right now, overall number 4 in the country. They're tied with Gonzaga in adjusted offensive efficiency. Iowa was 1 for a long time. They're back tied for 2nd. If you look at their adjusted defensive efficiency, this is what's concerning. They slid down to the 90s after the Indiana game. They are now 100. 8 days have gone by since the game. Other teams have played. Iowa is now at 100. I'm telling you right now, you're not winning a Final Four. You're not getting to a Final Four with that adjusted defensive efficiency. Okay? You're just not going to. You can say all you want about the offense. I have no faith in Iowa getting to a Final Four with that sort of a number. And I think Iowa is going to... It's not something where they're just going to turn it on in the tournament. That's just not going to happen. We've been saying this for 3 years. There have been decent performances. I'm not saying that the games between the Minnesota and Indiana games were not good. They were good, but not great. Northwestern, we're talking Rutgers, was okay at times. I mentioned Purdue was okay at times, but none of these have been great performances on the defensive end. Maryland, I thought that was probably their best defensive performance. But again, Maryland is so hit and miss, and usually miss if you look at their record. So again, Iowa right now is number 100 in the country in defensive efficiency, and that number could easily go down if Iowa isn't on tonight. Do I think Iowa will be on? That's another question. I'll give that prediction later on in our show. But Illinois, take a look at Illinois. Right now they're number 8 overall in offensive efficiency, which is elite, and they are number 23 in defensive efficiency, which is also solid. That is good. Compare that to Iowa. Iowa's number 100. Illinois is number 23. So those numbers would bear out a loss for Iowa. The fact that they're on the road bears out a loss. I think that the athleticism, we saw that was a huge difference against Indiana. We saw Rob Phinisee cause Jordan Bohannon all kinds of problems, I think because of his athleticism, his ability to be aggressive, and Jordan's inability to drive by Rob. And Iowa really doesn't have guys who can stay with quick guards. We saw that against Indiana. We've seen that in the past. That's why I think we need to see more of Joe Toussaint and Aaron Ulis. Tony Perkins is a good defender. He's very athletic. I think we need to see more of these guys. And then you slide in a guy like Keegan Murray, who's an elite post defender. Not as big, and he needs to work on the body heading into next year, but he is a shot blocker, rim protector. Though I think that will all help, especially against guys like Curbelo and Adam Miller. I think Keegan Murray could play a big role in guarding those guys tonight. Iowa is going to try to play zone. We know that. They're going to zone up a lot. They're going to switch things around a lot. But they need to be able to not match Illinois' athleticism, but at least curtail it to where it's not as big of a factor as it was against Indiana. Because, again, Indiana is not a good shooting team. They still put up 81. Iowa still lost by 12, and they were at home. So I know it's not apples to apples, but Iowa's going to have to perform better defensively. I think we all agree on that. And obviously you can't go 11 minutes without scoring a field goal. But Luka Garza after the game, I mean, dude just takes responsibility for losses. I mean, he just does. When they win, he gives the credit to his teammates. We're going to miss Luka Garza. I mean, obviously that's an obvious statement to make. But Luka's just going to have to come out here and do what he does and hope that the guys around him step up their games. And I think this week in practice, from everything I've heard from the coaching staff and from the players, it's been a lot better this week in practice. Sounded like maybe they were some okay practices last week, and maybe they let the foot off the gas a bit. Sounds like it's been pedal to the metal this week, and that's exactly what they have needed to do. So we shall see. But again, Iowa and Illinois tonight on FS1 at 8 o'clock. We'll talk about that in a little bit as far as predictions. I do want to get to a little bit of football news here in a moment. Let's take a quick break. We'll talk the latest for Iowa football, including a good news story about a offensive lineman who recently committed to Iowa from Florida, the state of Florida. We'll talk about that and more when we come back. Brad is Brandon Thoughts, week 146. Are you a Hawkeye fan living in Story County? Do you feel isolated, like you're alone in a maze of red? Well, you're not the only one. And that's why we here at StoryCounty.news have launched a brand new section of our website, From the Hawkeye of the Storm, which will feature our weekly podcast, Brad's Branded Thoughts, as well as other Hawkeye-related content for all you Story County residents who bleed black and gold, or if you live in Western Iowa, Eastern Iowa, or somewhere else other than Ames and you're a Hawkeye fan. We love your support. All of our content is free. So again, give our Facebook page a follow, give it a like, and give our Twitter page a follow as well. @FromTheHawkeye on Twitter. The more likes, the more follows, the more support we get, the more content we can continue to push out. And it's all free. It's From the Hawkeye of the Storm, hosted by StoryCounty.news, for the best Hawkeye content in the area. We are back here on week 146 of Brad's Branded Thoughts. Iowa football. Kirk Ferentz adding another piece to his 2021 recruiting class. 3-star offensive lineman from Florida, Michael Mislinski, has committed to the Hawkeyes. His father, this is kind of an interesting note, his father is actually a coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Since 2012, he's been with the Jags. He's a strength and conditioning coach for the Jags. He played in the NFL from 92 to 2000. Tom Mislinski is his name. So a bit of a pedigree here and a big get for Iowa. They were in the finals with three other schools, Texas, Maryland, and Michigan State. Mislinski had previously committed to Texas, decommitted once the head coach for Texas was let go, and now he is coming to Iowa City. Keep in mind how strong this 2021 offensive line class is for the Hawkeyes. David Davidkov from Winnetka, Illinois, is a four-star kid. Connor Colby is a four-star kid. Bo Stevens is a four-star, and then a high three-star, Jennings Dunker from Illinois. So they've got guys right now who certainly we could see some transfers at some point, because it's going to be loaded on the offensive line. Think about the guys Iowa has coming back. Mark Kallenberger, Jack Plum is back. We did lose Alaric Jackson, we lost Coy Kronk, to graduation as well. But we saw, again, those four guys being added in there. Justin Britt's back. Tyler Linderbaum announced he's back. Huge news there. Kyler Schott, we assume, is back. Cody Ince is back. This is a stacked group right now, and a group that really performed well last year. It's going to be interesting to see, and we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, Iowa right now is missing a 2021 running back. That's kind of the big story in this class right now. We haven't had a single commitment for a running back in this class. We did have some rumors about a kid that's committed to Louisiana, last name Williams. Doesn't look like he's going to be flipping to Iowa. And Iowa may be without a 2021 running back. Now, what does that mean? I don't think it means much. I know everybody wants to make a big deal of that. Here's the reason it doesn't mean much. This is the era of the transfer. And even Iowa, Kirk Ferentz and his ways, has had success going after transfer running backs. Think about Mekhi Sargent, who graduated this past season. Think about James Butler several years prior from Nevada. These kids are, you know, often looking for new homes. And Iowa's going to be fine at running back next year. I think Gavin Williams showed that he can be the third back. And then you've got Ivory Kelly-Martin and Tyler Goodson. They'll be fine next year. Now, if Kelly-Martin graduates, which we expect him to, although I guess potentially he could come back another year if I understand the eligibility quirk for the pandemic correctly, and then Tyler Goodson, say he goes to the league a year early, which is possible. I wouldn't say probable, but it's possible. Then you're going to be rebuilding for 2022. Hopefully Gavin Williams and LaShawn Williams can be guys that can step up. You know, but again, that's a year off. And they may get someone from a different school, a transfer, junior college, wherever. That would be big, though, if they could get somebody from junior college this year. If they could find somebody this summer, I think that's when Mekhi Sargent committed to Iowa several years back and came to campus, was in the summertime. Obviously, you'd like to have him there for spring practice, but the bottom line is, with Mislinski committing to Iowa, this is certainly a positive. He played center in high school, so he's a kid who can learn behind Tyler Linderbaum this coming year. I would not be surprised if that was part of the thought process in committing to Iowa. But they're going to be stacked for a while there. To me, this is a perfect place for a running back to come because of how strong this offensive line group is. Now, what's kind of interesting about this, if you think about the history of Iowa under Kirk Ferentz, they really haven't had the elite running backs. And it's kind of been I don't want to say consternation. Is that the right word? I'm a little bit surprised by it because you look at what Iowa's done as far as putting guys in the league between Brandon Scherff and Andrew Dinal and Austin Blythe and now Ike Becker. We saw him. He's a starter now for the Buffalo Bills. You know, Marshall Yanda going back even further. Robert Gallery. I mean, I can go on and on and on with these guys. Riley Reif. And yet, what's interesting about this, Brian Bulaga, they don't tend to get the big name running backs. They've been close. Think about Eno Benjamin, who ended up tearing it up down at Arizona State. He was committed to Iowa, decommitted, went to Arizona State instead. You think about Melvin Gordon. I believe he was he committed to Iowa? I think by all accounts he was expected to come to Iowa. Wisconsin ends up flipping him. He goes and plays for the Badgers. Now he's a starter and one of the best running backs, at least in the last 5 years, in the National Football League. So that's a little bit confusing to me. The only elite running back Iowa's had has been Sean Green. Sorry, Akron Wadley. He's not an elite back. I mean, he was good in some respects. He was good in the open field, but he was not an every down back. That's why he failed at the next level. And, you know, who else have they had? James Butler wasn't able to make it in the NFL. Jordan Kanziri didn't make it at the next level. Well, Sean Daniels didn't make it at the next level. Marcus Coker, I know he had some injury issues. Brandon Wager, I think he transferred down to Oklahoma and then played a little bit in the league, but, Adam Robinson wasn't an NFL back. They've had decent running backs, but just nobody that Albert Young, another example, but I just wonder, when is the ball going to drop on this? And will the racial issues that came up this past summer, is that negatively influencing recruiting? I don't know that it is. I think the pandemic has to have something to do with the fact that they've got one total recruit in 2022 and no running backs in 21. But again, if Iowa could get an elite back, first of all, I think they have a very good back in Tyler Goodson. I think he can be elite, and if he's going to be elite, he's going to be elite this next year. I think he certainly, with the stability that Iowa is going to have here at on the offensive line, and actually have a spring practice, a normal spring practice, at least I expect that to happen, I think he's got an opportunity to be elite, and Ivory Kelly Martin certainly is a viable second option. But I certainly think Iowa could produce running backs in the league. I'm shocked that you look at Iowa State, and here they've got Montgomery playing for the Bears, and you've got the kid, the running back for Iowa State now, whose name escapes me, who's going to be a back in the league probably next year. So, it's a little bit confounding to me, but the good news is Iowa's building a very strong offensive line class again. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to predict who's going to develop, but, I mean, look at all those guys. I mean, look at we're talking like 10 guys on the Iowa roster this coming year that I could see playing in the league. And maybe you say, well, that's crazy. That's too many. Maybe it is too many. But I could see Kallenberg getting a shot. I could see Ince. Certainly Linderbaum will get a shot. Britt's a physical specimen. I don't know about Schott. I think Schott would be one of those guys, kind of like Austin Blythe, that would really have to perform well on a practice squad first and maybe work his way to the next level, or kind of like Ike Becker. Same with Jack Plum. But then you add in all these guys. I mean, several four-stars and a couple three-stars. Not saying they'll all make it. They probably won't all make it. But they've got guys who potentially could be NFL offensive linemen. The other good news that we received here just within the last couple of weeks, and this was expected, this was something that I predicted at the beginning of the year, and doesn't take a rocket scientist to predict this, I understand that, but Austin Spiewak, the long snapper for Iowa, coming back for an extra year, as well as, big news, Caleb Shudak is coming back for an extra year. Keith Duncan opted not to return. Caleb Shudak is returning. We also got word, maybe we talked about this in the podcast before, Matt Hankins is coming back. Zach Van Valkenburg is coming back. So you got four guys that I know of right now that are taking advantage of an extra year. We did get some unfortunate news in the transfer portal. We mentioned last time Julius Brents is transferring to Kansas State. And Matt Lorbeck, the defensive end that transferred in last year from Northern Illinois, has opted to leave the program. That was a surprise to me. Especially given the fact that Iowa is losing several guys on that defensive line, I would have expected Lorbeck to have a shot this year to get in the rotation. So I'm surprised by that. But again, we don't know what's going through these kids' minds. We don't know the circumstances. But best of wishes to Matt Lorbeck moving forward. There have been some rumors about potentially Iowa getting another transfer from Northern Illinois. I will say this, and I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist on this podcast, but I will say this about Northern Illinois. I've been a bit surprised, and I said this even at the beginning of the season, where Kirk Ferentz basically said, that he thinks most kids are ready to be moved on after their time in college. They don't want an extra year of eligibility. I kind of called baloney on that. I'm not calling Kirk Ferentz a liar, but I don't know how that can be true. We've heard from guys like Don Patterson, who's interviewed regularly on KCJJ radio in Eastern Iowa, and he's talked about how college days are typically the best days of a kid's life, especially if you're a football player. And a lot of these kids are not going to be able to play at the next level. So it's very surprising to me that Iowa didn't have more guys return. How many guys did Iowa State have return? Did they hit double figures? I mean, it was something ridiculous. Iowa State is stacked. I don't think it's double figures, but it's close. Iowa State is stacked next year with guys who opted to return for an extra year. Iowa, on the other hand, has four guys, and they're all going to be guys that I think are going to start between Zach Van Valkenburg, Matt Hankins, Caleb Shudak, and Austin Spiewak. Okay, we'd expect them to start if they're coming back for an extra year. But why isn't Jack Heflin coming back? Okay, why isn't Coy Cronk coming back? I mean, maybe Cronk reads the writing on the wall. I understand maybe with him, he doesn't want a sixth year because he feels he's got a shot. He's got enough tape from Indiana. So that one makes a little bit more sense. The Jack Heflin one surprises me. Now, here's a guy who had a lot of success at Northern Illinois, had a good year at Iowa, started every game. I believe he started every game. Don't think he got hurt. If he did, he only missed maybe a game or two. But I'm just surprised that Heflin didn't opt to return. I could say the same for several other guys. I didn't expect it out of Davion Nixon or Chauncey Golston. In fact, Nixon left early. I did not expect it out of Chauncey Golston. At first, I was a bit surprised by the Keith Duncan decision because, to me, he didn't put enough tape. I'm not an NFL expert by any means, but I don't think Keith Duncan put enough on tape showing his ability to kick the long ball in the league. But perhaps he wants a shot in the NFL, and he has a career lined up somewhere else after football. I'm sure most of these kids do, especially if you're a specialist. No pun intended there. So maybe that's the case. I haven't looked through the roster here recently as far as guys that surprised me in that regard. But I will say that there were several guys that opted not to return that I think would have certainly been helpful to Iowa had they opted to return. Haven't heard anything from Barrington Wade. I don't know that there's a spot for Barrington Wade, the linebacker, who I believe, I'm not sure if he redshirted previously or not, so I don't know if this would be a sixth year. But, I mean, he's a kid probably not going to make it at the next level. And the thing about it is, would he get time next year? Iowa's got Jack Campbell returning. They've got Seth Benson returning. Nick Neiman, that's a guy that I'm a bit surprised didn't opt to come back for an extra year. But again, I think he's got a shot at the next level. I'm trying to think who else are we looking at. Obviously, the two wide receivers, Brandon Smith and Amir Smith-Marset, I thought both of those guys, there was a chance that they would return. Neither one is. So, Sean Beyer, that's probably another name at the top of my list that I'm surprised wouldn't come back for an extra year. He's dealt with some injury issues, showed a lot last year, but is he going to have a chance to get drafted? I would be very surprised if Sean Beyer gets drafted. But do I think he could have gotten drafted had he come back for a full year? Absolutely. So I'm a bit surprised by some of those decisions, but it was nice to see four guys, at least these four guys, decide to come back and play an extra year at Iowa. All guys who I think have an opportunity to, I don't know anything about Austin Spiewak as far as long snapping. Obviously, it's hard to make it to the next level as a long snapper, but I think between Caleb Shudak, his leg strength, Zach Van Valkenburg, what he showed last year, and Matt Hankins and Iowa's pedigree with cornerbacks, sending cornerbacks to the next level, certainly they all have an opportunity. And it was good to see, I don't mean to make this racial, but it was good to see a black player come back for an extra year. I think I can speak for a lot of fans and media people. It was good to see Matt Hankins, who was at the center of some of the complaints against guys like Chris Doyle in the offseason, opt to come back. That was good. And that tells you, I don't want to speak for Matt, but I think that tells you that he's not miserable here anymore. And I'm not saying he ever was miserable here, but I'm just saying he could grad transfer somewhere else or take a shot in the league. He's been starting at Iowa for, two, 3 years now. He could have a shot at the next level this year. He decides to come back. So that's good, and I'm not saying it's not to build his own resume, but I just thought it was good to see. And I think Iowa's got a lot coming back next year. They've got a good recruiting class coming in. They've got wide receivers who I think could play right away between Brody Brecht, Arlen Bruce, Keegan Johnson from Nebraska. Those are all guys who could play right away. And does Iowa get a transfer or two this offseason? There's a big defensive lineman from Northern Illinois again who potentially could come in. Again, you don't want to read into certain things. Again, I was surprised Heflin left after this year, and I'm surprised Lorbeck's gone. Not saying that's going to affect the other kid from Northern Illinois at all. No reason to think that, but certainly those are things to think about. Alaric Jackson, I never really expected him to return. He's been here. He's been here long enough to, I think, especially as a tackle, I think he's going to have a shot to get drafted within the top three rounds, which I think is the same for Davion Nixon. I think he'll be a first-round draft pick, and Golston will get drafted in the top three or four rounds as well. Maybe that's a little overeager, but I think Golston definitely will get drafted. The other news that we got regarding Iowa football was this. Jaimin Colbert, who opted out of this year, has opted to end his career as a football player. That's Jaimin's decision. I hope people respect that decision. I'm not going to comment on the decision. It's his own personal. I know he dealt with a lot this offseason, and not a surprise to me, though, at all. I think I you may remember me saying this back when he opted out. I questioned whether he'd have a spot when he came back. And I'm not saying that Kirk Ferentz and this coaching staff forced him out. But, I mean, listen, would Jaimin Colbert have played next year? Maybe he would have played. I mean, I just think it's so hard to sit out a year. I'm not a college football player, but to sit out a year and then try to come back, I think that would have been really difficult. And so, you know, especially with the guys Iowa has coming back at linebacker, they play a lot of cash now. You've got Seth Benson and Campbell, who I think have to be on the field almost the entire game next year. Behind those guys, I mean, who are behind those guys? Nick Neiman's gone. Let's throw up the depth chart real quick. Let's see here. Iowa football depth chart, just to see what we're looking at here for linebackers. After Benson and, let's see here, Justin Jacobs, the young, he was a redshirt freshman last year. Yeah, certainly a guy who I could see sliding into a kind of a role like Barrington Wade had last year, but again, a guy who could play that 4-3 defense. I don't know if you slide Seth Benson over to your weak side linebacker. I would not be shocked to see that. I feel like I'm missing somebody. Let me pull up the roster here. I'm not really in football mode, but since we're talking about it here. So you've got Jack Campbell. You've got, let's just run through the linebackers here. Let's see. Jay Higgins is back. He was a freshman last year. Wade should be gone. I expect him to leave. Mike Tim is a sophomore. Joseph Smith is a freshman. They got a young group of linebackers. Logan Klemp is a sophomore. Was a sophomore. Again, Benson's back. Nick Anderson was a senior, so apparently he's moved on. Nick Neiman. I guess I'm not missing anybody. So, they're a little thin there, but they've got a recruiting class. Let's see here. They've got a recruiting class that features a linebacker or two. Let's look up their commits for 2021. Let's see here. Linebacker. Justin Sullivan. I don't know. You know, I think he played defensive end in high school. Not sure if he will play linebacker or end in college. Same with Max Llewellyn. They've got some guys here. Jaden Harrell is another guy who is listed as an inside linebacker. That's probably it as far as linebackers. The other good news we got, Xavier Williams. Eligible immediately, going to be a grad transfer coming over from Northern Iowa, already signed, and that's good news for Iowa's defensive backfield. 5'11", 192 pounds, really good. I think he earned some FCS All-American honors. And, he's going to have an opportunity because you look at Iowa's back defensive backfield. They lose Julius Brents. They're going to get Matt Hankins and Riley Moss back. But it's going to give some competition for guys like Kayvon Merriweather, Dane Belton, potentially, and Jack Kerner, those guys. And certainly that's never a bad thing. I don't know if Xavier Williams is going to play for you and I this year. I don't think he's going to, but of course you and I plays their football season this spring, I believe, unless they know something that I don't. Maybe I'm behind, but I was thinking the most of these FCS teams are playing this spring, so not sure about that. But Xavier Williams, also another addition. So Iowa's got some good things happening here. There's no question about that. Good things happening. I tell you, those first two games next year, home against Indiana at Iowa State, that is going to be a slugfest to start the season, and I hope we have full stadiums, a packed house at Jack Trice. I hope we have a packed house at Kinnick. Will be absolutely fantastic if that happens. All right, let's talk Iowa-Illinois tonight. We kind of talked a little bit about the matchups tonight. I think Iowa certainly has some matchup issues when you look at Illinois' roster between Iowa Dosunmu, Kofi Coburn. Iowa struggles to defend big men. No offense, Luka Garza, just not a guy who's going to be elite post defender. But I do think Iowa can throw more at him simply because they've seen him a couple times already. And with Jack Nungy being back, that should help as well. He's going to have to get big inside if Iowa's going to have a chance in this game. Right now, the spread is 2.5 in favor of the Illini. This game, Fox Sports 1, FS1, 8 p.m. tonight. The Hawkeyes and the Illini. Keys to the game. I could go a lot of different places. I've basically said defensive rebounding and defense the entire year, which I know is kind of, you know, hey, Corey, you're stating the obvious. I'm going to go specifically Iowa's ability to match Illinois' athleticism. And what I mean by that is I talked about earlier, can Iowa get to the rim? Can Iowa keep Illinois from getting to the rim? If Kofi Coburn, Adam Miller, Curbelo, Frazier, those guys are getting to the rim every game, every play, every possession, Iowa's not going to win this game. I'm just telling you that right now. So Iowa's ability to match or at least semi-match Illinois' athleticism without one of Iowa's best three-point shooters in C.J. Frederick, I think is going to be key. And if Fran plays Joe Toussaint, if Joe Toussaint gets less than 10 minutes, if Perkins gets less than 5 minutes, if Ulis doesn't get any minutes, they're not going to win this game. Unless Jordan Bohannon and Wieskamp hit a fiery streak. But again, I just don't know how they're going to get open without another shooter, which has been the issue for most teams. It's you can guard one, maybe two, but when you hit that third elite 3-point shooter, it makes things so difficult. We'll see. But I certainly hope Iowa wins. I'm going to take Illinois tonight in a fairly, I don't want to say lopsided game, but a fairly comfortable win. I'm going to go Illinois 90, Iowa 82. 90-82 Illinois. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Iowa can attack. Maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid from the Iowa media. I've heard a lot of Iowa media people predict an Illinois win. But again, I'm going to take the Illini tonight 90-82. Again, Fox Sports 1, 8 p.m. Iowa time tonight from Welsh Ryan. Is that win on what? Not, is it Welsh Ryan Arena? Isn't that like Northwestern's arena? I think I've got that turned around. It's the State Farm Center in Champaign. Sorry, Illinois fans. The State Farm Center, although there'll be no fans there, of course, during COVID. And Illinois, by the way, has won two in a row after losing two in a row. So they're riding high. They have not won two in a row. They've won one after losing two in a row. They beat Penn State just this past week. So both teams have had some time off, certainly. Actually, Illinois has had a couple extra days off. Iowa, we thought maybe we'd get an extra Illinois-Iowa game, but we did not. Both teams had a long break. The good news is we did get one Iowa game rescheduled. The Iowa-Michigan State game will take place on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. That's good news. The second, Iowa is going to play three games in a matter of, like, what, 5 or 6 days. Let me take a look at the schedule here. They will play. So they play tonight, they play Tuesday, and then they play Thursday. So what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. 3 games in 7 days, so in a week's time. And then they play again Sunday, Wednesday. So they've got some games here, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, the following week. So playing a lot of basketball right now. Let's hope they get the Nebraska game made up. There are games being postponed, but a lot more games are being made up right now. I know that doesn't seem like that's happening. The Big Ten has made a lot of changes here in the last week or two. Michigan's on pause right now. You probably heard the variant that they've had an issue with up there at the athletic department, and the Michigan Department of Health shut them down for 2 weeks. Players are basically begging, petitioning to play. I don't think that's going to change. They're going to miss four games, so they're going to have to make up those games. Let's just hope that we can continue to get games in so that we don't have to cancel the conference tournament. We get 20 games. Obviously, that's the best-case scenario. I know a lot of people don't think that's going to happen, but I'd love to see a full schedule and love to see a conference tournament in addition to the NCAAs the following week. Again, Iowa-Illinois tonight, number 7 versus number 19 in the country, according to the AP poll. The Illini and the Hawkeyes in the State Farm Center in Champaign, Illinois. Again, 8 p.m. Iowa time only. On FS1, Fox Sports 1, also can be heard on the Hawkeye Radio Network and your local Hawkeye Radio Network affiliate. We will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to Brad's Brandon Thoughts, Week 146. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks!